Today on the 21st Show, social media is rapidly changing as people abandon Twitter for alternatives like Threads and Blue Sky. Meanwhile, TikTok is facing the possibility of a nationwide ban. We'll talk about what's happening, where people are going online, and the role of social media in our lives today. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up on the 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WNIJ in Rockford-DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. 2024 has been a massive year of change for social media. Elon Musk has continued to make his mark on the app formerly known as Twitter, now X, although I'm going to keep calling it Twitter. There are small changes like getting rid of timestamps on posts and more drastic shifts in what people can actually see on the platform. Many services have tried and to varying degrees failed to compete with Twitter in the past couple of years. But after the election this year, as the changes have kept coming, another alternative has emerged, at least in popularity. Its name is Blue Sky, and its CEO, Jay Graber, has been making the media rounds.
A lot of people are saying they're having a lot more fun here. They're having an experience where they're, you know, making friends online again and talking to people that is just something that they haven't experienced in a long time. And so we're growing that experience for more people and then showing people what else you can do.
Yeah, and they're also not seeing 1,000 ads every 10 seconds on the app. And maybe it's worth noting that we have set up shop on Blue Sky. You can find us there by searching for 21st.show. That's not the only upheaval that's been happening in social media either. Just last week, a federal appeals court upheld a law that could ban another popular platform, TikTok, or at least require it to break ties with its parent company in China. So what does all this change mean for the ways we interact with one another online? That is the focus for our program today. Later on, we'll talk about this with a couple of influencers from Illinois, but we begin today with Carissa Bell, who's been watching all of this play out as a senior reporter with a focus on social media at the news website Engadget. Carissa, welcome to the 21st Show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also with us, Dr. Melita Garza, an associate professor from the Tom and June Netzel Sleeman Scholar in Business Journalism at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Dr. Garza, welcome back to the show to you as well.
Hello, nice to be here.
And in these times, government relies on social media to get messages and timely information out into the world. And that is the focus of Ariana Donnelly, social media manager for Government Social Media, which is a network of social media professionals in the public sector. She joins us now as well. Ariana, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me on, Brian. Really looking forward to this chat today.
Yeah. All right. So listeners, if you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number. How do you use social media? What apps work best for you? And what do you think of the growth of platforms like Blue Sky? Let us know. 800-222-9455. All right, Carissa Bell, I want to begin with you. It's only been 2 years since Elon Musk took over what many of us still call Twitter. How has that platform changed in terms of how it works and what people can actually see on there?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny to think that it's only been 2 years because sometimes it feels like a lot longer, at least for me. You know, I think some of the changes, like you said before, are small and some of them are very big. I think one of the biggest things that people kind of notice now is the way that the main algorithm of the service has changed a lot. You see a lot of different, people think that you see more, you know, voices that align more with perhaps Elon Musk's point of view.
And you see more Musk himself too, right?
Yes, you do. You see many of his tweets. And then there's just also the way that the product has changed. I think verification is another great example of that. It used to be that to be verified, you kind of had to be a public figure or somebody who was, sort of a notable personality. And then, Musk, of course, upended that. Anyone could buy the blue check mark for $8 a month. It doesn't really do any kind of identity verification. So, that's caused a lot of problems. And at the same time, those accounts that do pay for that check mark, have their posts elevated within the algorithm. So I think that's really kind of shifted the mix of, information of what you see on the platform. It can make it a lot harder to sometimes find authoritative information, for example.
Yeah, I gotta say, somebody at our news organization sort of somehow registered all of us for blue check marks or went through whatever process there used to be under the old system. And those all got taken away. And I know some people still have them. It is interesting. And you find that, I don't know about what your experience has been, but there's just so much less engagement and views on posts than there used to be.
Oh yeah, I mean it's sometimes it can feel like talking into the void, if you will, because you look at which posts will get a lot of engagement. There are people who are paying for checks. A lot of these big accounts, and I know a lot of this has been a story for a lot of media organizations as well, that their reach has really just completely tanked over the last, especially last year on Twitter.
Yeah. And so, well, and Dr. Garza, let me bring you in now because every few months it seems like there's some new controversy or change on the platform that seems to prompt more people to abandon ship. How have you seen that playing out?
Well, I think the statistics show that the biggest shifts recently have come in November around the election, with another wave of people leaving X for Blue Sky and presumably other outlets. That said, I think one of the reasons that precipitating this exodus, if you will, is that goes back to the comment about fun no longer being a fun place, right? But if you pick that apart and excuse the person with a doctorate of philosophy to philosophize a little bit here, right? So what we're really talking about is the deterioration of the so-called digital public square, which is a fancy new word for the old idea of the marketplace of ideas that goes back many centuries to John Milton, right? So talking about the concept that let's let everyone or let all ideas be heard and the truth will come forward. Well, I think when John Milton conceived that idea, and then it became, of course, embedded as really part of our First Amendment by Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes in the development of our buttressing of that concept. It did not anticipate that there would just be a regular free-for-all in which so many ideas would circulate. And as Carissa pointed out, some of those voices are given a little bit of extra help in being amplified, not because they're more truthful, but because they're able to buy it, right? Buy that place. And then the second part of it is the idea that, well, if we could just have this digital public square and let all these voices shout, including voices that are toxic, that are spewing misogyny and racism, then that becomes, as we heard, not a quote unquote fun place, and certainly not a marketplace of ideas.
Ariana Dooley with Government Social Media, I want to bring you into the conversation. What reaction have you heard from people in your field as these changes have played out? And let me just say, I, for a long time, found Twitter to be a very valuable source of getting direct information from government, whether it was police alerts about crime incidents, road closures, weather alerts, that sort of thing. What have people in your space been saying?
Thanks for the question. So you really hit the nail on the head there. A lot of concern about if you leave that platform as a government agency, are news agencies going to be able to get those emergency alerts? I know that that's been a really important resource for not just the news agencies, but even for government agencies as well, because they're able to sort of get community photos or information about major crisis events through X as well. But for months, we have been hearing that reach and engagement has been down for a lot of agencies. Now, some have said their following has grown lately, but others have seen a notable drop since the election. So, of course, that's concerning. You know, with the verification as well, of course, the cost to the paid verification is a barrier for a lot of agencies. I will say there is a gray checkmark verification that some agencies are eligible for. They've said they've sometimes had to apply multiple times to get that before being let in. But also there are some agencies that aren't quite eligible for that. And so that's been an issue as well, because the paid subscription for a verified organization is quite a bit different than just an individual using it, around $1,000 a month at last check. So, of course, that's a concern for a lot of agencies, not necessarily being able to get that. Verification is really important because it really solidifies their voices as the agency and helps build that trust. But I did notice Chicago Fire Media, they on X have done a pretty good job. They have a specific X account that's just for those news crews. So I think that that's a helpful strategy if you're concerned about that, of course. And then there's also the concern of leaving the app and in terms of deleting the account, if that will create an information vacuum and lead to misinformation and disinformation spreading about the agency and not being able to combat that. So what we're seeing is the agencies that have decided not to post actively on there, they may only post for an emergency or they may reserve that handle in case they need to jump in at a later date and to avoid someone else taking that name over.
Yeah. And hoping that Twitter doesn't impose some policy where if you don't, you know, engage with a platform regularly, they can reclaim your name and send it back out into the public. I feel like I've heard that as a possibility somewhere. Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. And for the entire program today, we're talking about social media, how it's been evolving over the past couple of years, the sort of exodus, if you will. I'm going to blame Christine, producer Christine, for that one, to places like Threads and Blue Sky. And also a little later, we'll talk about the prospect of a national ban on TikTok. My guests for the program today are Dr. Melita Garza from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, Ariana Donnelly, a social media manager for Government Social Media, which is a network of social media professionals in the public sector, and Carissa Bell, senior reporter with a focus on social media at Engadget. We heard from some listeners about this. Brody in Champaign told us, deleted all my social media accounts around my 30th birthday in 2020. It was rough for the first few months, but the space it made in my life was ultimately filled with books and spending time with my partner and our friends. Great decision. I'd highly recommend for others. Stop posting, Brody said. We also heard from Steven in Urbana who said, I don't use social media. Think it's a gross waste of time that largely misinforms and rots the brain. The negative consequences of it are yet to be fully illuminated. The brain did not evolve to be bypassed by this toy and will suffer in the long run. Carissa, what do you think of that? There are a lot of people opting out. Twitter has changed so much. A lot of people are staying anyway. What do you make of it?
I mean, I'm certainly sympathetic to, you know, people whose reaction here is just, you know, just unplug, just walk away from it. You know, and I think that's definitely something that can be helpful for a lot of people. If it, you know, if it feels like it's becoming like a negative influence in your life, then, you know, I think there is sometimes value in, you know, kind of walking away, deleting the app, don't posting. At the same time, I think there's a lot of people who, you know, maybe don't feel like that's an option. You know, if you're, a lot of people find connections with, you know, people that they otherwise wouldn't be able to connect with through these apps. And, you know, they get support and, you know, sometimes really have like meaningful connections with others, you know, through these services. And so I think sometimes it can be really necessary for people.
So, you know, I come to social media from a very news-oriented standpoint. That's how I've always engaged with it. But Dr. Garza, there's another element to the story here. We talked with another professor on the show a couple of weeks ago about how people get their news on politics. So I may be going to social media for news, but a lot of people are just there and maybe they happen to run into news. They're not seeking it out. Pew Research had a survey earlier this year that showed more than a quarter of American adults said they do not get their news from social media at all. So what are people getting out of these platforms, if not that?
Well, I think there's a sense of entertainment to this, right? It's a great tool if you want to procrastinate. There is this tendency to quote unquote doom scrolling as well. So it's a gadget. It's an app. It's there. It's part of the culture now. And I think one of the callers or commentators, listeners who voiced their point of view of the deterioration of the brain, the brain rot, is kind of shows that there may be a trend towards people realizing that, you know, staring at a device all day is not the best use of their time. So I think it's a time filler for some people.
Yeah, I got to say, I had really slowed down my usage of these platforms as a consumer and a poster, even before Elon Musk took it over. But I don't know. It goes back and forth. I guess, you know, I'm like everyone else. I tune in for sometimes major news events, election, sporting events, that sort of thing. You know, Ariana, we need to take a break in a minute, but, you know, it's one thing if an individual chooses to opt out. How are government agencies thinking about that, especially if they've built up a big audience on a platform?
Sure. So a lot of social govs, we call them, government social media managers, they have that duty, that sense of duty to inform their audiences, even when it gets tough for them personally. So, of course, we do recommend taking care of yourself, mental health, and stepping away during your personal time and being very vocal with your leadership about getting more support. There are quite a few teams of one out there. And so having those conversations about needing other people to help chip in with that so you can step away when possible. But as Dr. Garza said, we've seen a lot of shift in that demand for entertaining content. And it's really refreshing and exciting to see how these government agencies really lean into that. More of them are embracing those two-way communication strategies, recognizing that each platform is unique and adapting that messaging. So leaning into a less formal voice and tone, as you know, we've traditionally seen from a lot of government agencies, to really connect and build those meaningful relationships, mm-hmm. and adapting trends in a way that's not just entertaining, but it's also educational. So agencies.
Sorry to interrupt you. We're going to have to take a break. We will continue this conversation shortly. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about changes in social media for the hour today, how it's been evolving over the past couple of years. People seem to be leaving the website formerly known as Twitter, now X, I guess we're supposed to call it. They're going to places like Threads, and recently there's been a significant uptick in users at Blue Sky. It's still a pretty small percentage of the share of total users that older platforms like Twitter have, and even Threads, which is Instagram and Facebook's version of a text-based social media site. But it is growing, and it does seem to be having a moment now in the post-election period. We are talking about this with Dr. Melita Garza, Associate Professor in Journalism at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, Ariana Donnelly, a Social Media Manager for Government Social Media, which is a network of social media professionals in the public sector, and Carissa Bell, Senior Reporter with a focus on social media at Engadget. In a little while, we'll be hearing from some Illinois influencers who are being affected by these changes and what may be happening with TikTok soon. You can join us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Carissa, I want to ask about the algorithm and how you and your colleagues, and I don't know if you want to speak for Engadget, but maybe just sort of generally, how are you thinking about places like Threads, which has explicitly said they don't really want to encourage politics and news there, and Blue Sky, or, you know, do you stay on Twitter?
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, I think Threads, their algorithm is very much a black box to a lot of people, even to the creators who are active there, who are even, you know, part of their monetization programs. Because the thing with Threads is that, you know, they rely so heavily on that default for you algorithm. And, what it chooses to service at any given time is, a lot of people have complained that it's not necessarily accounts you're following. Meta said that they recently, they want to try to change that. It's, kind of random voices that you're not connected to, people sharing like personal stories. And, as a, if you're, say, a journalist trying to break through with something, timely, I think it can be hard because their algorithm just doesn't seem to prioritize, something that's very timely. I think with some recent news events, you see a little bit more of that breaking through, but you just don't really get that kind of reach and get your posts in front of people very easily if, the algorithm doesn't kind of hit on your post for whatever reason.
Yeah. Ariana, how do you see government agencies dealing with trying to meet the algorithm, right? I mean, you can't really do the Tide Pod Challenge if you are the Sangamon County, Public Works Department or something like that. But you do have accounts. I can't remember which Plains State, you probably know this off the top of your head. There's like a Plains State Natural Resources Department or State Parks Department that has a really funny, or had at least a very funny online account. How do you deal with trying to, build reach against these algorithms?
Yeah, so National Park Service, maybe the one you're thinking of, they're really a fan favorite among a lot of the government social media communicators, but they are able to do a lot of fun posts. Of course, it doesn't always speak the same for other agencies who don't have fun animals or beautiful landscapes to post about. But still, a lot of them do a great job of still jumping on the trends that you wouldn't normally think an agency would touch. For example, Village of Bartlett recently, they got a lot of good fanfare in our government social media community group on Facebook for a post pulling on a popular meme, and they turned it into a PSA. So that meme grabbed people's attention. They turned it into a PSA about watching for deer this time of year. Utah Department of Transportation over on Instagram also does a really good job of incorporating trends into those need to know campaigns, whether it be about construction and road safety. Also, Washington State Department of Transportation, WS. on X, has a really approachable, casual voice and tone. A lot of people feel like they're speaking to a friend when they interact with that account. So that organic engagement, a lot of times through trends or just having that approachable voice and tone, showing content that humanizes your agency, shows the behind the scenes, a lot of time that organic content can really break through those algorithms and make a meaningful impact and also educate someone as well, or have some fun and show some humor when the time's right.
So, okay, I want to talk also about this idea that the writer and internet philosopher Cory Doctorow has put out there in recent years. He coined this term to describe how over time websites often shift value away from users and then even away from customers to sort of hoard it for themselves. And in so doing, they make their products worse for everyone. Now, we can't actually say the full word that he uses for this on public radio, but let's just say he calls it embleepification. And I mention all that as a prelude to share this text message we got from Brandy in Urbana, who says, I've been really enjoying Blue Sky as a space without ads. Ads have corroded every space, in my opinion, from mobile gaming to social media. I get so tired of being marketed to. So to have a space online without ads is very refreshing. Thank you for that, Brandy. Carissa, I feel compelled to add, for now. What do you think? Is embleepification even coming for Blue Sky?
I mean, I think we're probably a very, hopefully, a long way off from that scenario.
Yeah.
They're still pretty small. They're just under 25 million users, That said, they have, they do have to make money. They are a company. They do have to figure out a business model for the service. And, Jay Graber, the CEO, has come out and said that she does not want to go down that path of the word you mentioned for Blue Sky. And so, they've thought about kind of alternative ways of making money, like through subscriptions. That said, I think with all of these companies, as they grow, as they get bigger, there's just going to be more pressure to make money. So I don't think we should expect that there will never be any kind of ads necessarily. I do think that they said that they want to be more thoughtful, if such a day will come. So we'll see.
Yeah, we will see. I'll say I paid for Twitter pre-Musk when it was the old Twitter Blue service. I think it was $2 or $3 a month that let you edit tweets. I think it reduced ads. I found it valuable. I would do that again in the future if anyone's listening from Blue Sky. Yeah, don't lard up with the slot machine, the totally irrelevant ads that you see now all over Twitter. Dr. Garza, I want to go bigger picture with you as we're coming toward the end of our time together and back into your, maybe you can lean on your philosophical background a little bit, because as we are seeing these changes in these platforms, what does that mean for the way we build relationships with the people around us and maybe the people that are a little more distant from us?
Well, that's a pretty broad question since there's a lot of different kinds of people out there. I think one thing I would say, I guess, of concern to me as a journalism professor is the extent to which the generational dependence on social media and apps has somewhat impaired the ability of journalism students, for example, who will be future journalists, to feel comfortable actually talking to real people. I've seen this trend. I think it was exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic and the move towards online, but increasingly number of students, even this many years out, just uncomfortable with going out and doing interviews. It's talking to people is not a part of their daily set of activities as it had been in years pre-pandemic. And coupled with the dependency, I would say, on the entertainment box known as the smartphone, I think this has really created some barriers to developing journalists as we had in the past. So I'm not sure if that answers your question. I think, but I also want to double back on this idea of the funness of the public square, quote unquote, funness, or the actually healthiness of the digital public square. And I think it's worth noting that the X is a platform that is, according to Pew Research, two-thirds dominated by men, one-third by women. And I think also the threats to journalists on and to, especially as a young person thinking about going into this field, like, oh, am I going to be doxxed? Am I going to be attacked? And I think that whole misogyny aspect of this is also is very concerning in the sense that does that, to the extent to which that seeps from the virtual world into the real world.
Do you think, Dr. Gressler, would journalism and journalists be better off without this sort of social media platform? I mean, some of the downsides are it does lead to groupthink. It does lead to sort of prioritizing speed over accuracy, perhaps.
Well, I think it also, to the groupthink idea, I think there is a certain amount of insularity. If you go back through their research over the years, some of the single largest user groups on Twitter were journalists. So it's a lot of journalists talking to each other. And so I think if your goal is to reach a lot of people, the consuming public, I don't know that has always been the best route to do that, considering that it's always been a very small, frankly, marginal segment of media consumers that used Twitter. And I think that is lost because the people that are on it, all their friends are on it, all their competitors in the news business are on it. And I think there's a certain lack of perspective on who they're actually talking to. So I guess the answer is yes. I think there is some dangers there.
Yeah, of course, the incentives in journalism have often been impressing your colleagues more than impressing the public, though. But maybe that's a conversation for another day. Dr. Melita Garza is an associate professor and the Tom and June Netzel-Sleeman Scholar in Business Journalism at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We're going to let you go. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we will continue on with Carissa Bell, senior reporter at Engadget, and Ariana Donnelly, social media manager for Government Social Media, which is a network of media professionals in the public sector. 800-222-9455. If you want to join us today, that's 800-222-9455. And we're going to turn now to some of the concerns around TikTok. And Carissa, can you remind us, there's been legislation passed this year. What are some of the concerns that motivated that based on TikTok's data collection and what's happening with that?
Yeah, so the government has been very motivated by what they describe as national security concerns, because TikTok is owned by ByteDance, which is a Chinese company. People within the national security establishment and outside of it too have warned that, you know, there's this risk that the Chinese government could use TikTok to gain information about Americans via the app, you know, and also perhaps, you know, influence conversations, you know, that are about our politics or culture, or, you know, whatever's happening by sort of manipulating the TikTok algorithm. And so, you know, they've put forward this bill that they said that they want ByteDance to either sell the app or they will ban it as a result of these concerns.
Yeah, we got another text from Gina in Springfield who said, I imagine that trying to ban TikTok, even for national security reasons, will just drive it underground and invite more problems. I do not use TikTok personally, but I believe in American citizens' right to watch and listen to its content. Carissa, what would this ban actually look like from a user experience? I mean, is the app going to go black at midnight on a certain day?
I mean, we'll see how the, you know, the court challenges play out. But as it stands now, the deadline is January 19th. And if the, you know, ByteDance hasn't complied, which it seems like so far, you know, they have not, then app stores are prohibited from having the app in their, Google Play and Apple's App Store. And also internet service providers will be, you know, obligated to kind of block the service. So yeah, I mean, it would be, you know, pretty much inaccessible.
Ariana, there have been a number of state governments and institutions that have banned installing TikTok on their government-issued devices, but there are also governments that use TikTok. So I don't know if you can speak to how connections on TikTok might be different from the sort of engagement people get on apps like Facebook or Twitter, for example.
Sure. Thanks for the question. So it does go back to trends quite a bit, because as we know, TikTok often drives a lot of the trends that you'll see elsewhere on other short form video apps. So that's a great place for agencies to sort of get creative and maybe try something that they wouldn't do on a different platform. Because as I mentioned earlier, a lot of them are realizing that each platform can have a unique voice and tone. It's also a great option for agencies that are trying to reach those younger audiences and sort of teach them about civil processes and get them engaged in their local community as well. So of course, that's been a concern for those agencies that are active on it currently about where they will reach these people if they're no longer able to have access to it. But I will say social govs, they're very good at adapting. So of course, they're going to keep an eye on all of these developments. And they're already looking at Instagram Reels to actively post there, or YouTube Shorts as well, and see what they can take from what they've learned on TikTok and adapt it to these other platforms sort of as a backup plan. And it's really something that is, of course, a wait and see. I know some people are pretty nervous about. I enjoy TikTok in my personal life for entertainment purposes. So it'll definitely be something we'll be keeping an eye on to monitor those developments and let our community know, as I'm sure you all, we got a lot of great journalists here today on this call. So I'm sure you all will be doing the same.
Well, we have to take a break here in a moment, but just briefly, would you feel the loss if you could no longer access TikTok? Personally, I had to set the parental limit on it on my phone because I would just waste too much time. Is it something you would really miss?
Personally, yes. Sometimes I'll sit down to watch a movie and then I'll realize I opened TikTok and I ended up spending my free time that way instead. But I will say I do have a journalism background. So a lot of times when news items do come up on that platform, I make sure to, of course, go search and verify it first. But I know that's an issue for some of the younger people, such as my son. So we'll miss it personally.
All right. Well, Ariana Donnelly, social media manager for Government Social Media, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
And Carissa from Engadget will be staying with us. After the break, we are going to continue on this theme. We're going to talk with a couple of Illinois-based influencers, hearing about what social media means to them and how they are thinking about the possibility of losing TikTok. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I am Brian Mackey, and we have been talking all through the program today about social media has been evolving over the past few years, from the takeover of Twitter by Elon Musk, rebranding it X, and now people shifting away from that to other platforms like Blue Sky and Threads. And we've also been talking about the prospects of a law that could ban TikTok in January. There are plenty of people, influencers, to use one term, who have built up a following on TikTok. A third of adults in the U.S. are said to use the app. So what happens if that platform goes away? And what do these creators get out of social media? Still with us is Carissa Bell, senior reporter with a focus on social media at Engadget. For this last part of the program, we're going to be talking more about this, also with a couple of these Illinois creators. Jen White, who is not to be confused with the Jen White who hosts 1A on NPR. Jen is a lifestyle influencer based out of Chicago. She's got nearly 150,000 followers on TikTok. Jen, welcome to The 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
Also, there are business owners who use TikTok to build connections with customers and others. Cassidy Wilson is a hairstylist in Dixon in Lee County in the northwest part of Illinois. She's got around 20,000 followers on TikTok. Cassidy, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And listeners, you can join us today by calling 800-222-9455, especially if you have questions about what it's like being an influencer. Maybe you've always wanted to do that yourself. 800-222-9455. All right, Cassie, I'm going to start with you. And just to give people a little sample of what you do, we have a clip from one of your videos. This has been viewed 1.9 million times. Let's listen.
It might be common knowledge, but it never hurts to share. Here's how I rip my foils in half. So I pulled them all, did my little flip. I take a color bottle and just smooth them out, like so smooth. This will help them to just tear nice and even down the middle. And this is a thick pile, so I'm going to divide it in two.
All right, this is very like practical advice. Cassidy, how did you get into TikTok in the first place?
So when I started, I had TikTok just for fun and I never really used to post. When I started posting, I would just post hair transformations, you know, your typical before and afters. And then I tried to experiment with different things, kind of like the clip you just played, more from like an educational standpoint. And I really felt driven by that and realized that it not only was able to inspire me, but help a lot of other people. So I've kind of gone more that route lately where I'm sharing more tips and tricks behind the scenes, kind of the reality of the business that people maybe might not want to talk about. And I feel like it's been really, really helpful, not only to myself, but to others.
Do you enjoy it? Is it fun?
I love it. I think it is the most fun. I spend probably too much time on TikTok, but it's the most fun.
How long does it take to make a video like that? It seems, you know, it takes us 30 seconds to watch it. How much effort goes into something like that?
So I guess it depends on what kind of video I'm doing. Sometimes I feel like the videos that I almost put less effort into do better for some reason. So like the clip you just played, that was kind of on the fly while I was doing a client. I was in the back room and I thought, this is such a common knowledge like hack to me, but to others, it's going to be groundbreaking. So I decided to film it. It maybe took me about 5 minutes, maybe 10 to edit it and then make sure it was perfect. So I would say under 20 minutes for something like that.
Nice. All right. Jen White, I want to turn to you now. We have a clip of your work as well. Let's listen to that.
I'm back at the International McDonald's in the West Loop in Chicago. Let's try some more items.
These are the garlic fries from China. Let's see. Oh my god. Obsessed. Next up, we have the cheesy bacon supreme from Poland. So there are fried onions. That's a cheese patty. There's something called lumberjack sauce. Oh, there's also bacon on it. This is also amazing.
Okay, I did not even know about that international McDonald's, so that was news to me. I also want to add some context. That video has 5.9 million views. If you compare that to the top non-sports program on TV this past Monday, that was The Voice, that singing show, that had 5.2 million viewers. So, Jen, same question. How did you get into doing content for TikTok?
First of all, I love that, the stats there with the millions of views. I first got into TikTok right before the pandemic. I had been creating content on YouTube for a while, and I started with Amazon hauls and then transitioned into Chicago history and then vlogs and just grew my audience from there.
Were you basing it based on your passion or what was hitting with people? Talk about how you, because you seems like you've experimented in a number of different sort of TikTok genre, if you will.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if you remember beginning of the pandemic lockdown, we weren't going anywhere. And I was seeing a lot of great videos about Amazon hauls. And I thought, you know, I've been buying a lot of stuff there too. Let me show people what I bought. And those videos were taking off. But then I honestly ran out of things to post about. And I went back to what I had been doing on YouTube and was like, how do I turn a 15 to 20 minute vlog into 60 seconds? And I started playing around with it. And I started telling my audience, I had just turned 40. And I thought, you know what, let me just say this out loud. And I said, a day in my 40-year-old life. And that's where I found my audience.
What do you enjoy about TikTok?
Every single thing about it. I'm like, Cassidy, I learn things on TikTok. So as a user, I learn so many different things. I have met some of my closest friends because we're content creators and we've met through the app. I also mostly love connecting with my audience. I receive messages from women every day who thank me for the content that I put out there and say that I give them hope and I, you know, bring light to their life. And so it's all encompassing. I love every aspect of it.
Cassidy, you're a business owner. What has it meant for your work and your business to have this social media presence?
It's been really helpful. So I'm located in Dixon, Illinois, and we're a pretty small town in the grand scheme of things. It's helped me to reach clients from honestly all over Illinois and even the surrounding states. I have a lot of clients that come from Iowa City to see me. I have a lot of clients that come from the suburbs, so like the Naperville area, Aurora. And it's been really helpful for me to gain exposure and to reach a much larger audience than I ever thought that I could.
These are people that you wouldn't have had as clients, but for TikTok? Or do they see you on there and they tell you that?
Yeah. Yep. Usually when I have a new client come in, I'll ask, oh, how'd you find me? And a very, very big majority of them say that they found me through TikTok.
That's amazing. Jen, again, almost 150,000 followers on TikTok. How has that affected your life in the real world, so to speak?
Well, in the real world, so I actually got my last 50,000 in the past 8 weeks. So I had a couple of videos go viral recently. But in general, it's affected my life in the best way. I've built a side hustle for myself that I will be soon turning into a full-time job. I also, you know, get recognized in public and take selfies with people. And it's really fun. And I don't know, I love every part of it.
I was going to ask you about that. So how do you make that decision, side hustle to main job?
Predictable revenue.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's so many different revenue streams because I'm not a business like Cassidy is. And so it is, you know, there's affiliate revenue, brand deals. Things aren't predictable just yet. And that's what I'm waiting for to go full time.
Yeah. All right. I want to share. Let me actually take a moment to remind listeners. This is the 21st show. We are talking about a potential ban on TikTok and what that app in particular has meant to a couple of Illinois influencers. Jen White, not to be confused with Jen White of NPR, but is a lifestyle influencer, you might say, based out of Chicago. And we're also talking with Cassidy Wilson, who's a hairstylist and business owner in Dixon in Northwest Illinois. And we still have Carissa Bell, senior reporter with a focus on social media at Engadget, with us today. Let me ask, we got a message on Blue Sky, actually, from somebody, The Xander Files, I think is the name of the account, says, I personally only use Blue Sky now. It's great for community. and reliable news from journalists. At work, we are on every platform, but the engagement we get from TikTok outshines all other video and social sites. It'll be a huge loss for us and our science communication efforts, this person said. So, Jen, let me ask you about that. You mentioned that you've been on other platforms in the past, or maybe are still. How does engagement on TikTok compare and differ from those other places?
In general, it is much higher engagement with, I look at engagement as far as likes, comments, shares. It is, I feel like there's more of a sense of a community on TikTok, like we're all in this together versus, and I am on Instagram, I am on YouTube. Those are my main platforms. It's just the engagement is really, really high. And I get personal messages all of the time on TikTok.
All right. So as we've been talking about, there's this possibility that TikTok could be banned next year. This has been something that's talked about for, I don't know, months now, maybe even a few years. Now, Cassidy, let me start with you. What would losing this platform mean for you?
You know, it's kind of hard to tell, but there would definitely be a big shift in, honestly, I think like my sense of community, kind of how Jen mentioned, TikTok feels very easy to connect with your audience. It's easy to make quick connections and to kind of have more of like a personal feel. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects my business, especially since I mentioned that I do get a lot of clients from TikTok compared to other platforms that I use. I use Instagram a lot, and I just feel like there's less kind of like one-on-one feel of an interaction. So I think there'll be a big shift in how easy it is to connect with an audience and how easy it is to grow a different type of audience on a different platform.
Jen, what about you? Same question. What would TikTok going away or becoming unavailable mean for you?
Very similar to what Cassidy was saying. It would be a lot. I mean, what I think is that our loyal followers will find us on other platforms. So I'm not as concerned as I used to be, because if the app is completely gone, viewership will go elsewhere to other platforms, whether it's Instagram, YouTube, or, you know, an app that doesn't exist just yet. It will be an adjustment for me, because I find that I can test my content on TikTok a lot more quickly than I can on Instagram or YouTube. So it would be a shift. I'd be really, really sad if it goes away, but I would continue to create content.
Would it affect your plans to go pro, or maybe your timeline?
It would, but you know what I've noticed is I work with different brands, local, national brands, and I've noticed a shift ever since this has been in the news. And I think it's been, you know, I think almost a year, if not a little bit more, like you were just saying. Brands, for me, put more emphasis on Instagram followers. I can charge a higher cost per thousand as far as viewers are concerned on Instagram than I can TikTok, even though I have more than twice as many on TikTok. So, you know, I think it's important to continue to focus on creating content on multiple platforms, because you never know what's going to happen, but it would definitely be a shift.
Jen and Cassidy, thank you so much for being with us. Carissa, I want to end with you, Carissa from Engadget. What has TikTok said about the possible effects of a ban?
I mean, they've really, you know, like the conversation we're having today, they've really focused on the impact that this would have on their creators and small businesses. In a statement they put out just this week, they calculated that just in 1 month of a ban, that creators would lose something like $300 million. And small businesses, you know, would lose even more. You know, I think we forget that, you know, TikTok is a multi-billion dollar company, but not just, you know, that's not just for them. That's also, you know, the ecosystem that they've created for people and businesses. So, you know, I think they've really come out and just, you know, that's sort of their lawsuit. They funded a bunch of creators, were part of the lawsuit, you know, trying to challenge the law. And I think, you know, that just kind of shows like how central they've tried to make creators to this conversation.
Last question. I'm not going to ask you to predict the future. Of course, we can't do that. But what is next? What is the next step that you are watching for? Court hearing or something like that?
Yeah. So this week they filed an emergency injunction where they're basically asking the courts to delay the implementation of the law because they think, you know, there's a chance the Supreme Court may take it up. They think, you know, perhaps the new administration coming in might have a different approach. So they're asking for a delay of the law, and then also kind of waiting to see how things play out with a possible Supreme Court appeal.
All right. Carissa Bell is a senior reporter at Engadget. Thanks so much for being with us and sharing your expertise and reporting with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
I want to thank also Jen White, influencer from Chicago, Cassidy Wilson, a hairstylist and business owner in Dixon, Illinois, as well as Dr. Melita Garza from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Ariana Donnelly, and everybody who sent us text messages sharing your views, and Blue Sky posts sharing your views about social media and the future of social media. Again, you can find us on Blue Sky. We are there at 21st.show. And you can also find us on YouTube by searching for Illinois Public Media, plus all your favorite podcast platforms. We are everywhere you might want to listen to us. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening, and we will talk with you again tomorrow.